I don't know what happened there, but the internet just all went.
Yeah, we wonder.
I don't know if you. I'm a bit worried about whether it's capable of sustaining what we're trying to do on it. I've just got to delete that. So just as well I called the thing on the live feed, at least as well I called it live, hopefully, because it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And Kirby, obviously, should we do it without him, this for a laugh?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I'm all panicked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
See, I didn't tell you.
What? He spoiled.
Oh, got me laughing.
Yeah, brilliant one. Perfect comedy timing from Mr. Bartlett Sloan.
Am I going to have to wait until we...
I thought
the nightmare. We said, yeah, okay. APP Services, Lavazzi at Boo1.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 369. I'm Adam, and excellent. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Harry Sullivan is an imbecile!
And Mary Lang.
Please don't call me human. Just doctor would be nice. Thank you.
After lots of stops and starts, we're finally going to get around to recording the podcast.
Master, I'm surprised you didn't take that one, because that's the obvious one.
Which one, sorry?
Harry Sullivan's an imbecile.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was a bit harassed.
I had to ask him what the obvious one was, too.
I was a bit...
It seemed obvious, too.
What I was originally going to do when you didn't take it, what I was going to do... I'm getting a bit old for this sort of thing.
All right, never mind the quote.
Exactly,
I'm just saying, Garm fans will notice that the Garm himself has just taken up residence in his usual spot for the show.
Oh, yeah.
He's a twonk, isn't he? All right. Okay, let's get... Oh, now he's walking towards the door now because...
No, go back there. No, I'm not.
Well, don't distract him. Right, girls and boys, we're going to be reviewing Revenge of the Cybermen. I'll be ready. All right. Well,
sure.
Thank you for your enthusiasm. Episode 1 begins with the title sequence and... Picked up for the end of the last episode where they're flying through space hand in hand and they arrive back on the Ark. And
Fred was very amused watching that as they're going around in circles like that.
Yes, it was a bit
silly. Yeah.
Harry would quite like the time ring for his little personal collection of trinkets, but unfortunately it disappears. So he doesn't get to have that. And then they find a dead body. And
they find a whole bunch of
dead bodies.
Shop window dummies.
They've been dead for a while, but apparently there's no funny smell or anything because the sterile atmosphere in the don't get too excited, everyone. By the way, there's no quiz this week. Oh, the disappointment! No quiz this week, so you don't. Yeah, and then we see the control room and some bloke who's destined to have some CSO stuff drawn all over him later on in the episode, trying to communicate from...
What do you mean?
Well, the chap who's the initial controller with the Tash. He's the first one.
The things on him, the veins, which are the same... It's supposed to be the same virus from the moon base.
Yes.
Those aren't CSO.
How do they make a flash and everything, then? Sure, that's a bit of CSO.
They're reflective material. They were using it a lot during this period. It's reflective material, and you put lights on the camera, and you turn the light on and off. It's like the reflective material from traffic signs.
Oh, that's interesting. I always assumed it was like the Green Death, and they sort of did a... Didn't they with Green Death, it was CSO? Or was it the same process?
I think they used the same process.
Ooh, you're going
to
be funny.
And then we'll see it again in a few weeks. The one where it's another Fourth Doctor Sarah one in a few weeks. I forget the name of it.
Was Seas of Death, Seas of Doom? Oh, for goodness sake, what is going on with the internet? Right then, by the way, listeners, we've had a few internet issues. because the white fiber bandwidth has gone a bit bananas, which doesn't help me out in the slightest. Kirby, are you still there?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you got a bit. You went a bit Kirby. Oh, sorry, Cher.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it wasn't your fault on this occasion. It's my end. Yeah. So, moving back to the story, we meet a few of the characters.
I kick out the out of the struggles with the Cybermet, both him and Sarah Jane. You know, Master? The hands that are holding it to them more than knocking them away.
Yeah.
Master.
Yes.
Speaking of bananas, Carrie Blyden, who was the incidental music composer, also wrote the theme song for Bananas in Pajamas.
The bugger. right. So we meet a few of the what they call these people, incidental characters for the story. One of which is the baddie, the blonde bloke, which whose name I forget at the moment.
With a curly,
yeah, him. And then we have
Jeremy Welp.
Pardon? Yeah, who died quite recently. We spoke about it last week. And then, of course...
See, I was prepared for a quiz.
Wasn't that one of the chap from the moon base? One of the white-haired bloke?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, because he was talking about Cybermen. I thought it would have been quite interesting if they actually made him the same character. Because, obviously, it was a Cyberman story, the last one he was on. And
No, he was from... he was in Seeds of Death. He was Commander Radnor. Sorry.
Oh, was he? That's from the Ice Warrior story, yes? Hello?
I think so.
Right, okay.
And the other guy was in Mind of Evil.
Oh, that's right. He was a prisoner, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. So, anyway,
And he was also Guy Gisborne in Legend of Robin Hood in 75.
Thank you for that. So the Doctor and Sarah,
my job.
And thank you, and Harry carry on wandering around. And then we have a sort of little clip from the surface of Voga and the awful costumes that the characters on Voga have. and I quite enjoyed the big computer screen with the sort of MS-DOS text coming up on it.
Yes, that's so horrible.
Yeah.
And then while the Doctor tries to get into Q section, there's a little hole in the door when he's trying to feel his arm around. Then we get that comedy scene of the door opening with the Doctor's arm stuck in it. And then
I was afraid we were going to see blood spurting out as his arm was chopped
off.
I mean, and he tells them to hold the door and they don't do it at all. They just sort of stand there and watch it.
I know, but he gives Harry the dirty look, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. During the commentary, when that happened, Elizabeth Sladen just laughs because of that dirty look.
Yeah, not surprised. But it is funny. I had to show Deb that one, my Deb, because I thought it was so funny. So, meanwhile, there's a bit of a sort of almost brewing up civil war going on Voga, and they've nicked all the Time Lord Seal of Rassilon logos.
Yeah,
no, I would say the Time Lords nicked it from these guys, because this is first.
Okay. Possibly, I suppose, yeah.
And then we have Davros wandering around holding a handkerchief.
Do we?
Yeah, it's Michael Fisher.
Oh, is it?
Yes, he needs to, yeah.
Oh, I never even noticed. Yeah. That's two stories running. He had a busy year this year, didn't he?
and the leader, the old man, is Mavic Chant.
Yeah, I couldn't see that. I knew it was, but I couldn't see him.
No, it's awful, this costume.
But the voice, he's got a very distinctive voice, and I didn't really pick up on that.
I kept wanting him to go, Pekka!
That they filmed this one first, before Genesis.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
And it was the work that Swisher did on this one that got him the part of Davros for Genesis.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh. Well done, Mary. Ow.
My fingers. How about that? Ding. I got to be a little bit of a Kirby here.
Well done.
Yeah, I did not know that. I didn't read that anyplace.
Well, the story is that the guy that was originally cast for some reason couldn't do it, and they remembered, you know, Swisher. I guess he auditioned different voices, and so they turned to him and said, you know, okay, you're Davros for this one.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he's been doing computer voices and Dalek voices for them for years.
Yeah.
Before this.
Right, sorry, I got slightly sidetracked. But some interesting information from Mary. What's that chap with the blonde hair, the baddie with the curly lip? What's his name again?
Kalman?
Yeah, he's basically going around sabotaging things and plotting and scheming.
Yes, and he also borrowed the hairbrush from James Bond, Live and Let Die.
Did he?
It's the same one, same prop.
Oh, well, there you go.
And according to Matthew, it was sold to the BBC for £5.
Oh, okay, brilliant. So we forgot to mention the bloke with the tash, the communications bloke, has got bitten by a cybermat. And what?
I hate these cybermats.
Do you? But they've got quite a big jump on them, a bit like the cybermats that are in Tomb of the Cybermen. I think that's quite consistent.
Yeah, but they're just so much bigger.
Oh, well, things, you know, things don't stay the same, do they, in the world? I noticed that Kelman has got an early version of the iPod, iPod Touch, so he can actually tune in and watch.
Oh yeah.
What's going on. But I also thought it's quite interesting that essentially it's a still that they've used, and then with a bit of CSO they've played the footage over it to show what the Doctor and his.
Well, there is one scene in I don't know if it's in this episode or the next episode, where they forget that it's got the yellow CSO on it.
Yes.
And you just see it sitting there in the background with this yellow thing on on it with no CSO insert.
Oh, well done, Kirby. I'm not going to give you a ding for that because that's just typical of you. So the chap who's been bitten, he dies pretty quickly.
I noticed that Harry's way of being a medical professional is to just hold on to the guy around the shoulders and stare at him. You know, that's his medical examination.
I also noticed that they're pointing guns at everybody 1 minute, and then they hand the gun over to Sarah the next mm-hmm. minute. Completely trust
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm. Very trustworthy person, though, isn't she? So, obviously, towards the end of episode one, we have a little glimpse of the Cybermen. And the little spaceship the Cybermen are travelling in, it sort of reminds me a little bit of the Pigs in Space spaceship from the Muppets.
Yes.
So we now know that. Well, the title's Revenge of the Cybermen, so we must know the Cybermen are going to be in there somewhere. The Doctor, meanwhile, starts poking around Kelman's room and hides under the bed. Kelman sort of, I think he realizes this because he,
yes.
Or did it, yeah. So because he sets off some sort of electrical thing on the floor, the Doctor jumps up onto the bed to avoid getting killed, and then uses a sonic.
But I thought the Doctor turned it off before he started his little, you know, climb over furniture way out. He turns it off.
Oh right, yeah.
So I wondered why he was going to such lengths to get over to the door the way he did.
Good point. Maybe he's worried that he hadn't quite turned it off properly. I don't know. Anyway, Sarah, meanwhile, is a bit bored. She's messing around with one of the computers and gets attacked by a cybermat, including lots of screaming and stuff.
And that was originally going to be the cliffhanger.
But it was a cliffhanger.
No, the cliffhanger was the Doctor. Oh, well,
that was a cliffhanger.
You're right. Sarah. I'm wrong.
Hey! Hang on. That's all. I've got my priority jingle folder over for that one. There's going to be a bit of a delay for this one. We've had a few internet issues this evening, listeners, so you can understand my delay, but I really must have the opportunity of playing this particular jingle if I can find it. What should we do? Should we do the proper one, the full-length one? I haven't played it for a while. The trouble is I can't find it.
Why?
The jingle. Oh, this one.
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Yes.
The point is, I didn't write these things down, but in a lot of the ending of the first and second episodes, they kept shifting around, making last-minute decisions what the cliffhanger was going to be.
Okay.
So you've got like multiple cliffhanger moments.
No, if you say so. But what I would like to say, that was quite good fun, finally getting a chance to play that particular jingle, but I could have got around it much quicker by playing this one. Right, moving on. So Sarah's done in by the Cybermat, and as very quickly gets very ill. The Doctor realizes that he can save her quickly if he transmats them down, her down to the surface. So Harry very kindly volunteers to carry her and take her down to the surface of Voga, while the Doctor and his new friends try and sort of essentially catch Kelman in the act. I don't know what he's up to, but
it's faster.
Yes.
Okay, the Doctor uses successfully this transmat to get the virus out of the Sarah's system.
Yes.
By saying that it will only transmat human
matter. Yeah,
human matter.
About so, that too.
So what? Why aren't they A, naked?
With
a
yes.
B, how come the Cybermen can use the transmat?
Well, thank you, Kirby. That was going to be one of my major points when I spoke about it.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV show. Right, so yeah. And also, he's a Time Lord, so how come it managed to beam him down to the surface as well?
True.
Okay. Science fiction fantasy TV show. But it does make sense that it would filter out, harmful...
Yes.
Bacterium, what do you want to call them? Right, because, of course, as soon as they arrive on the surface of Voga, Sarah's wondering why the hell Harry is carrying her. And I do love the fact we see that the sort of polystyrene balls again. Lovely bit of reuse.
Yeah, they're the exact same ones.
Yeah, well, they would be, wouldn't they? And,
Master?
Yes?
Have you ever visited Wookiee Hole?
Yes.
Did you look for... specific filming locations and stuff?
No.
Or did they point them out during the tour?
I can't remember. It was in 1978.
Oh, well, you're going to have to go back. It's not that far.
Well, I wouldn't mind going back, actually. I seem to remember it being quite interesting. But, yeah, one day, maybe.
I would love to go there.
But not for Doctor Who reasons. I seem to remember my trip to Wookiee Hole in 1978 was when myself and my granddad were heading to Wales to live there for 4 years. And he thought, we left in the morning. He thought, well, it's going to take all day to get there. We might as well just drop in a Wookiee Hole and have a day out there. I might have been there twice, actually, once with the school. But anyway, what I remember most about it is that to get to Wookiee Hole, you have to travel through Cheddar Gorge. And, of course, Cheddar Gorge is where cheddar cheese comes from. And that was what stuck in my mind. The other thing about Wookiee Hole was it was originally a store place for unused Madame Tussauds figures, heads, and whatever. So there was a sort of a storeroom for that stuff there as well, which was quite interesting. Yes?
One of the passages that we see them use in this show, they no longer use for... It's not on the tour anymore, but they're using it for cheddar cheese making in Wookiee Hole.
Mm. Cool. So anyway, back to the story. Yeah, so they're, like you say, Kirby, they are riding around a lot of the Wookiee Hole facility. And I imagine the gunfire, and they would have been very loud in the caves, but there you go. And the masses of Cybermen gradually approach Nerva. And
masses?
I'm being sarcastic.
Do they have four?
Yeah, I'm being sarcastic.
Oh, but they have the stuff on board to build a whole army.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Is that what they said?
Yes.
Oh, I missed that bit. Sarah and Harry have been arrested. They were going to be killed, but that's right. They have been arrested, and then they decided they were going to kill them by taking them away to kill them. So they tied them to some stalagmites, etc., with gold chain, which, of course, Harry realised gold being a soft metal should be quite easy to get out of. While they're sort of trying to free themselves, the decision was made to execute them, but they sort of managed to get away from their bonds just in time. Excuse me, I'm just burping. And I'm skipping through while there's lots of chasing around...
Poor Kevin Stoney. You just cannot tell that that's Kevin Stoney.
No, that's the thing. It's because of his voice. He doesn't use his traditional Kevin Stoney voice that he used in the Dalek Master Plan and he used in Invasion.
The Invasion.
The Invasion. Yeah.
The Invasion.
It's a shame. So there's a lot of sort of potential civil war going off on the surface of Voga. Meanwhile, the Doctor, sorry, the Cybermen arrive on the spaceship, on Nerva, sorry, and then shoot the two, you know, the two friends of the Doctor, and then shoot the Doctor. With their guns in their heads, a bit like the old Silurians. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And we think that's a very good cliffhanger, that. Because you would
that one is good, yeah.
You would have thought that was it for the Doctor. I must admit, when I watched this the first time, which was actually the Revenge of the Cybermen was the first VHS tape I bought. And I remember it was in the days when VHS, it wasn't, you know, you can get them for £10 or whatever. They were only available to rent. And I worked in a video shop, so I had to buy a copy that you would normally rent out. So it was a bit more expensive, but I managed to get it on special offer for £45.
And what's £45 at the end? That's what, 100?
I don't know. It was only 1981, 1982, something like that. So this is the first VHS, proper VHS tape I got of Doctor Who. But it,
Master?
Yes?
This was the first ever released Doctor Who.
Yeah, I'm sort of saying. Video. But that it was also abridged. They'd taken out all the ending, the middle bits of the episode, so it was just one complete feature length story.
And you would think this is an odd one because it's not very good. Why would they release that one first?
It is a bit weird. I'd like to know what the BBC's thinking was behind it. I'm not saying it's not a good story, but there are a lot of better stories. So why they decided that this particular one would be the first one on VHS, and you know.
Well, I can interject some information here.
Woohoo, Mary!
I did read that the BBC did a poll, yes, asking people what story would they like to see again. And for some reason, this one won the poll, so that's why they chose to make it the first.
I wonder if it's because among the Doctor Who fans, that they obviously they'd be copying their VHS tapes all and exchanging them like they used to do in the old days. This is the one that they didn't have, so they decided to have
very
this one.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Kelman comes along and starts rifling through the Doctor's pockets and quite amusingly finds some jelly babies. I would have eaten one of them, of course. So. And
well, you know, Master?
Yes?
I did not know this until earlier today when I was listening to the commentary. Apparently, Philip Hinchcliffe walked around with jelly babies in his pocket.
All right.
And he was the influence for that.
All right. I didn't know that.
Starting.
Did you know
that? Yeah.
Anyway, well, thank you for that, Kirby. Anyway, so he finds a half-eaten apple and all that stuff. And then Sarah and Harry are rearrested, but this time by some slightly friendlier Vogans. And the Doctor and his friends have not been killed. They've just been taken prisoner. And the Doctor gives the Doctor the chance to be slightly sarcastic and frivolous to the Cybermen, which is very amusing.
Master?
Yes?
When the Doctor and the two guys wake up in the corridor and they're sitting there, they're sitting there as hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil.
Are they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Take a look.
If you say so. Right, anyway, so I'm not going to look now.
It's about 2 minutes 35 seconds in.
2 minutes 35. Oh, well, because the way they're... I see. What's that for, then?
Just as it was a joke.
Oh, very good. I've watched this story hundreds of times.
It was the same joke that you know, they did the same joke in Planet of the Apes, the original movie.
Okay, but that's really weird. But the thing is, I've watched this. This is probably the most watched Doctor Who story I have.
Missed that.
What?
And you missed it.
Yeah, that's what's surprising about it. So,
why is it most watched for you?
Because it was the first VHS, first Doctor Who I had at home that I could actually watch on VHS.
Oh, okay.
So I used to watch it over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, a lot of money on it, so I can understand that.
Anyway, right. So, the Cybermen decide that Kelman can go down to the surface and carry on with his scheming, and
which is stupid.
Yes, and the Doctor and his other friends get bombs tied around them, but not before Christopher Robbie's hands go around the Doctor's neck. and the Doctor manages to get away, and he's going to blow up everything, but then he gets knocked over the head, and does a lot of funny grinning, which is quite amusing. And then we meet the only of the Vogons of which the face is quite obvious who it is. It's an actor that's been in Doctor Who a few times, and I can't remember who it is, but it's really weird. You can't actually disguise his face, even though he's got all that prosthetics on him. It's quite clear who it is. But
which one?
I don't know which one it is. I can't remember, but I recognise him. I say if I saw him in another production, I could tell
probably
you.
Probably Brian Grellis.
Maybe.
He was in Revenge of Cybermen, Invisible Enemy, and Snake Dance.
Well, when we see him again, I'll let you know who it is. Just bear that
in mind. Is it the Tyron?
I don't know.
The other leader?
I don't know.
No, Tyron was in... That's Kevin Stoney.
It's the chap... You know when Kelman arrives on the Voga and the bloke comes up and points a gun at him? And sort of... It's that bloke, basically. Anyway, so the three of them... What?
Master?
Yeah.
You know, you just mentioned Christopher Robbie. You know, yeah. His other famous role in Doctor Who.
He was the carcass or something like that.
The carcass,
yes. Yes, I know. He also used to be a TV introduction person on Southern Television when I was a kiddywink. He was like an announcer, TV announcer on Southern TV. Right, so the Doctor and his friends have now got bombs attached to them with little devices that if you tamper with it they're basically going to explode, and they're sent down to the surface with a few Cybermen, and I can't remember what the point of that one is, actually, even though I've watched it hundreds of times. This is the first time I've watched it in several years. So what was the point of the bombs then? Is that to make them sure that they do what the Cybermen want them to do, or
no, the bombs is the idea is to take it to the center of Voga,
yeah.
And explode them to destroy Voga.
Oh, because they don't like it because it's made of gold. Now, this was the first reference to Cybermen not liking gold, if I remember rightly.
But I don't understand. I never understood, because if they're to take them to the center of Voga, and they have 14 minutes to escape, I mean, escape to where? Because they're going to get blown up no matter where they are on the planet.
Right.
And second of all, how are they going to get the bombs off of them so that they can escape? If the bomb, you know, if undoing the straps is going to make them explode anyway.
Well, that was the clue that it would that the Cybermen were lying anyway.
Yeah, well,
and that's why the Doctor was trying to come up with a plan.
That lead Cyberman, when he was up in the beacon, was saying how they only had so many minutes to escape. So I mean,
leader.
Yeah, well, you know, so I thought they were just lying too. But when he said that, I thought, well, is he actually giving them a chance to escape?
And this was the first use of the term cyber leader.
Yeah.
Also, apparently, when Kit Pedler and whoever co-created the Cybermen, he also wrote this one, invented the Cybermen, they did come up with the gold thing originally.
Yeah.
It was written out of, like, the invasion.
Oh, okay. Right, so...
Which I never liked the whole gold thing.
No, nor did I, to be fair. But there you go.
Stupid.
It is stupid. Right, so I'm skipping forward. I'm just back to the bit where the Doctor, Sarah and Harry are hiding in one load. Sarah and Harry are hiding one load of caves, while the Doctor and his friends are sort of skulking around a load of other ones. And we see that the opportunity for them to use the little underground lake, so Sarah can ride that little boat in it,
and fall off the. And almost drown.
I didn't see that bit, actually.
No, that's not... You don't see it, but that actually happened while they were filming. And they blamed it on the curse of the Witch of Wookiee Hole.
Yeah, I've seen that Witch of Wookiee Hole. You know that thing? I've seen that.
You can see the Witch of Wookiee Hole in some of the scenes.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so Sarah ends up back at the polystyrene balls. So she beams herself back onto the Nerva, but of course she thinks the Doctor's up there because she knows that they're going to... The plan is to... blow up or aim the rocket at Nerva. So she thinks she's going up there to help the Doctor get off Nerva before the rocket sort of goes up and sort of blows them up. So at some point Harry causes a rock slide and everybody gets covered in rocks. The Doctor's unconscious and Harry approaches the Doctor to try and get his sort of, you know, bindings off him. Mm-hmm. Which then leads, rather amusingly, to the beginning.
Harry Sullivan is an imbecile.
Yes, basically. Mm-hmm. Did you cause that rockfall, Harry? Did you try and undo this, Harry? It's so funny. Yes, yeah, well, I did. Yes, I suppose I did. Yes.
Apparently, the little conversation before the Harry Sullivan is an imbecile was made up during rehearsal on location.
Mm.
It wasn't originally scripted that way.
Mm. You know, watching this rapport that Ian Marta and Tom Baker have in all these episodes, it makes me so sort of sad that they didn't carry it on, because just worked so brilliantly.
Their relationship was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, there was the fake Harry later on. No spoilers. Later on, in Android Invasion, but that was not the Harry that anybody wanted to see.
That is a spoiler to me, because I've not seen that one.
We haven't seen the story.
I don't think I have either.
Well, no, I won't spoil the other half of it then, but okay, well, I didn't know that. Sorry. Sorry, everybody who was watching this and didn't know that.
No, you've spoiled it.
Believe it or not, I've not seen every single Fourth Doctor story. I've seen most of them.
Well, yeah, that is a shock, isn't it? Sorry, that just certainly deserved that. Right, sorry, we'll slip away from that particular spoiler.
Part of the reason we're going through all these is so I'll see every single story.
Okay. Oh, that's partly the reason, is it? Okay. All right, so I forgot to mention, actually, that Harry's very excited by the fact there's so much gold on the planet. But they actually yes. use this gold to sort of get a plan together. Some of the Cybermen, the millions of Cybermen that came down get killed by a bomb, and Sarah, who's still on the spaceship, she gets found by the Cybermen, and of course the Doctor discovers that she's up there and goes up to save her, and there's a very interesting scene.
The whole plan, it's so silly.
Yeah, but what I liked about the Doctor's arrival back on Nerva, and him and sort of Sarah sort of get all excited in her eyes when she sees him, and she's whistling, and the Doctor's making all these signals to her. It reminded me a little bit of Catherine Tate and the Tenth Doctor, you know,
yes.
Had their sort of reacquaintance.
These Cybermen, I mean, the Cyber Leader stands around with his hands on his hips, and
yeah, I know. So cyber-like, yeah.
It's called delegating. But what I liked about this, I think I'm fairly certain, I may be wrong, this is the first time a cyber leader said excellent. That's why my
quote was excellent. Yes, you are correct.
In a Doctor Who story. Oh, do I? I'll get it. Okay. So that's why I used that.
Yeah, and from here on, the cyber leader will always say excellent, although no one says it excellent as well as the next cyber leader we will see.
Yes, David Banks. Who was in fact a very good friend of Alistair Pearson, so maybe we should try and get him at the Comic-Con. Right, so things then carry on. The Doctor and Sarah hide from the Cybermen, and then, there's half of the Vogons don't want the rocket fired at the beacon. But there's a little battle goes on, and then the baddie gets shot, but he still is able to operate the machinery and fires the rocket. And so the
Master?
Yes.
Why did the Vogons have United States on the side of the rocket?
Yeah, I wondered why they just happened to have a Saturn V.
kind of gave away their stock footage.
Yeah, it's a shame, really, but there you go. And there's a funny scene in which when the Cybermen sort of grab hold of the Doctor and Sarah, the Cyber Leader grabs the Doctor by the shoulders and does this shaky thing. It's almost like a neck massage, which is quite amusing.
Which is someone on Facebook pointed out, come on, Tom Baker just broke his collarbone a few weeks before.
Yeah, really. Can't feel good.
So they get tied up, and when the Cybermen realise the rocket's sort of heading towards the beacon, they decide to leg it into their spaceship. What happens? So they're able to redirect the rocket so it blows up the spot cyber ship, doesn't it?
Because the Doctor has to coach the Vogon to, you know, which dials to pull or which levers to pull to redirect it.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
No, he's telling the leader of the humans what to do.
But then, of course, somewhere along the line, Nerva is heading towards Voga, and all the controls have gone, so the Doctor has to find some sort of manual override thing to try and make it so it misses.
Screw in the wall.
And then there's Harry sort of communicates with them, do you realise you're heading straight for us? And then, of course, that Sarah finds it a bit irritating at the other end of that particular conversation. There's a really amusing thing where that when we see the ship just sort of narrowly skimming the surface.
That's so silly.
It looked like a Klanger planet, which was quite amusing. And of course, they managed to get away from it. And the TARDIS arrives, and Harry arrives, and without saying goodbye, they all just slip away.
Yeah. Well, did you notice that when the Doctor opens the door to the TARDIS, that the message tape that he's going to later be wearing is hanging on a hook right inside?
Well, no, I saw Kirby, I didn't
in
notice
there, but
that.
I didn't know what it was.
I didn't notice that at all, no.
Yeah, it's the same stuff that he's going to say as the message from the Brigadier.
Oh, well, thank you for that, Kirby. Were you interested in that particular feature, Mary?
What
Kirby just said. Were you interested in that?
I don't understand. Was I interested? I saw something hanging inside.
No. But were you interested in what Kirby was talking about in regards to the ticker tape stuff hanging inside the TARDIS door? Did you find that interesting?
No.
Thank you.
Excellent. Right then, now we've had some things come through on the Facebook feed. We've got Lauren X. Hi folks, late again, but ready for my cyber leader chiropractic adjustment. And Anity Butcher said, Adam just said something Kirby said was interesting. That was a question mark at the end of that. And then he says, yay the Garm, who has just moved away from his parking space next to the front door of the house. Right, so everybody, I'm just going to say what I think of what's it called again? Revenge of the Cybermen. My opinion of it is a bit sort of tainted by the fact that I've watched it so many times. I don't think it's that good. What irritates me a little bit, it's a shame we brought back the Cybermen, which were quite a menacing race from the history of Doctor Who, and didn't use them to the best of its ability. We only saw four of them, and it only felt like there was four of them. It didn't feel like that we have in previous stories known that there may have been four or five actors playing Cybermen, but they've made it look like there was many by different camera angles, clever direction or whatever. It always looked like there was only four or five Cybermen, and it didn't feel particularly menacing because of that, because they were really outnumbered by the people. They had a planet they really shouldn't go down to, because it was, you know, it was a gold planet, and why would they want to go there if it was going to a very good chance of poisoning them. And there was various sort of things that were irritating. It was fun in some ways. It was charming to see obviously the characters of Harry and the Doctor, those sort of interactions, really good fun. It was a shame we couldn't see the facial acting of people like as you said, Kevin Stoney. So it's more for me, it's sort of a middling sort of story. It holds a certain amount of affection in my heart because, like I say, it was my first ever VHS recording. But it's so far, the ones we've watched, this is the worst of the Tom Baker stories that we've seen so far. It won't be the worst in, obviously, when we watch all of them, but it's still, you know, not that good. What do you think of it then, Kirby?
It's silly. It is not very good, and yet I was grinning while watching the whole thing, because it does hold a... It was my first Cybermen story. I saw it in 1980 during that first run when I'm first watching Doctor Who in the student center at Northern Illinois University, where I'm having to compete for one of two televisions in the student center to watch Doctor Who. And I'd been looking forward to actually seeing a Cybermen story. So they were my first Cybermen. But it's just, I hadn't seen it since until last week.
Yeah.
And even though I have the DVD, I had watched the, as usual, when I get the DVDs, or used to get the DVDs, I'd watch the extras without watching the stories. It's fun. It's stupid. It's not very good. I'm going to have to think about which Tom Beckers are worse. Maybe Nyman. I don't know. Once we get through them all out, we should rank them all. But it's just silly.
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Right, brace yourselves, everyone. It's Mary.
Well, it was awful. So awful. It was so awful.
Doctor Who, it's not awful.
So awful, it was fascinating. Fascinating to just see all the contradictions, and as Kirby was saying, you know, the silliness, the stuff that just doesn't add up. You know, so that kept me going was how much worse can this get? Cybermen walking around with their hands on their hips. You know? Now, I liked the look of these Cybermen, but of course, those human-like voices kind of took away any real threat for me. And that they were dealt with so offhandedly, they didn't even seem very smart about what they were doing. So they weren't even very scary as monsters. And then the thing that is supposed to be lethal for them is this planet made of gold. And what do? They transmit to the planet. Yeah. No apparent ill effects. And why is it that armies are shooting machine guns at them when they could just lean over, grab a handful of gold dust, and throw it at them? And they would be just... and that whole thing that you said, Kirby, about how the transmat removes anything that isn't human. Well, yeah, I was wondering, too. So why aren't Harry and Sarah arriving naked? Why are the Cybermen arriving with nothing but what human organs were inside of them, you know, laying quivering on the floor? It was just one stupid thing after another. And I was kind of shocked when everybody, the Cybermen, the Vulgans, everybody's speaking English. And I'm thinking, wow, the TARDIS translation circuit.
Yeah, and it's not even there, yeah.
Yeah, because these Vulgans, they had to have developed independent of any humans, so you'd think they'd have their own language.
Yeah.
Just awful, awful in every way, but because of it, extremely amusing and therefore fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing that really pulled through for me, too, was the acting, primarily, of our three main people.
Yes.
Sarah Jane, when she hears that the Doctor has arrived on the ship, and they do their little whistle thing. I mean, her excitement and relief is so palpable that I was excited for her. And then at the very end, when they're saying, you know, well, you know, aren't we just going to say goodbye or anything? And the Doctor's like, nope, the Brigadier has told me, you know, we've got another adventure. Sarah, who is looking just relieved and happy to have all this over with, suddenly her face just turns to this, I don't know, tragic irritation and unhappiness, because like, oh no, not another one. I think she did an amazing job. Yeah. I think the Doctor, Tom Baker's Doctor, is entertaining all through, and I do love Ian Martin, you know, as Harry. I wish that Martin. He would stick around longer too. I'm sorry, what?
Marta.
Ian Martyr.
Martyr, I'm sorry. Yeah, I wish he would be hanging around much longer too.
Absolutely.
So those three make it worth watching. But the rest of it, oh, my God.
Well, that's quite interesting, Mary, because I seem to remember when Elizabeth Sladen became Sarah Jane, obviously during the John Pertwee era, you weren't that sort of taken with her.
No, I wasn't. But, boy, by now, she's really captured me.
Yeah, and also the same thing happened with Joe as well, when Joe first came into it as well.
Oh, yeah. Not for me. Joe never made it.
Really?
You know, to me. No, she had her moments, but she never overall, you know, seemed to be totally there for me.
Okay.
What you were describing, though, about Sarah Jane, that's exactly why she is still my favorite companion.
Uh-huh.
That's why she's really everybody's favorite companion. That's why she had her own TV series 30 years or so after leaving the show, because she was so good. Anyway, right, we have some feedback.
Master.
Yes.
A couple of notes, because things that Mary was saying.
Okay.
The Vogans, however you want it. They're not Vogons, obviously. But anyway, their language.
Mm.
Okay, they live on this small planetoid moon thing that's very small, and yet they know what mice are because they make references to you quivering mouse.
And, there's
another phrase for another. I forget what it was, but another reference to an animal that they shouldn't even know what it is.
Well, and wasn't it kind of tedious for you, this the same old, you know, the old standard military political way of thinking against the young, you know, energetic, destroy everybody way of thinking? I'm so tired of that storyline in all of these.
The infotext pointed out that the three main Vogans, one of which was Michael Wisher, were very similar to the three main gray-headed individuals from Carnival of Monsters, one of whom was played by Michael Wisher.
Oh, yeah.
There was the old one, the funny one, and the rule follower one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. Right. Thank you, everyone. All right. Joshua Dybel says, only 6 out of 10 for me, does very little for me. The story hardly holds my attention. The Mondasian Cybermen, which thankfully we've been treated to again, are so much scarier than this bunch, though I'm sure I was scared of them as a little kid. This lot look like they have a job fighting their way out of a wet paper bag. They're so wooden and such boring villains. Their voices grate on me. Even the Doctor seems unfazed most of the way along. He's giggling his way through most of it. And as for the Vogans, they should be done for copyright. I'm sure the Time Lord trademarked the Seal of Rassilon. Sorry, difficult to say much on the positive front about this one, apart from Tom Baker's little quips and his usual quirkiness. No gold star for this week's story. Next. Laurie Nix says, the Doctor got the best of it, eh? Mind that broken collarbone, mate.
Yeah.
So that's about it for Kirby's request. And let's see what else we've got, shall we? Oh,
did Ian Kirk send something?
He did. He has indeed. But I seem to remember last week there being a request from Kirby to have the opportunity to read Alan T. Butcher's feedback. So I'm going to grant that.
I didn't make that reference.
I think
absolutely.
You did. So I'm going to send it over to you forthwith. Bear with using the manner of Facebook messaging. Here it comes. It is with you now. Good luck. I heard the ding, it's definitely with you.
Where is it?
Yep, we all heard the ding. We know you have it.
Yeah, I heard the ding, but I'm looking for it. Hang on.
I should really ask Alan who actually wants to read it, but nevertheless, you are reading it this week, yes.
Oh, wait, where'd it go?
I don't know. I have no control of what's going on at your end.
Yeah, I'm just trying. I would like to make it larger, but...
I beg you would. That's what she said.
Good grief. Goes on forever.
All right, you go, Alan.
Mogman, not dead. The Golden Years or the Anarcho-Syndicalist Reprisals. Dear 20 Megabiters, The Revenge of the Cybermen is, of course, a closely studied examination of the syndicalist nadir in the 1970s. Having been reduced to a low ebb by both military forces and by the employment of Vogan gold reserves, the Cybermen's prospects seemed very proscribed, much as the anarcho-syndicalist movement had been reduced by both the preference for state socialism and by capitalism. However, the praxis of syndicalism, which must come through collective power demonstrated by trades unions and other workers' cooperatives, were still potent. It may seem unfair to cast the Cybermen to represent these powers, but what we see here is a powerful strike to defeat the capitalist metaphor, Voga, which looks destined to be successful. However, extremist Vogans mercilessly employ both subterfuge through Kelman and a big rocket to eliminate the syndicalist Cybermen. The allusions to extreme conservatives that came to the fore in Britain during the 1970s and their underhanded tactics are, I am certain, clear to you. It should be noted that although some might suggest that the Vogan costumes are rather pantomime in nature, but as ever, they are aliens living in a space rock. Live with it. We also learned that Tobias Vaughn did survive his disappointment with his cyber allies back in the 1970s or 1980s to go on to integrate himself after massive plastic surgery at a high level with cyber nemesis, the Vogons. The young Maudrin's presence calling himself Boris, oh, that's who that is, okay, is perhaps something to do with the obvious Time Lord interference exhibited by the Seal of Rassilon stamped all over Hogan culture. Oh, yeah. All in all, The Revenge of the Cybermen is a solid science fantasy story in accordance with the predominant Doctor Who archetype. As happened with Daleks after a long absence, the manifestation of the Cybermen here has slightly lost its way in terms of voice and emotion. However, it remains a well-constructed, duplicitous intrigue with a lot to entertain the viewer. It's perhaps 16 and a half minutes too short or 4 minutes 45 seconds too long. I'm not sure. Next up, Doctor Who and the Settling of Differences, or Let Zygons Be Zygoned, in Climping and the Dunes of Littlehampton, West Beach. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Hey,
good job, Kirby. Yeah.
Well, yeah. He was trying. I'm sure he was trying to trip people up with the narco-syndicalist.
Yeah.
But I remember doing a lot of reading in my teens on the Wobblies,
right.
The Industrial Workers of the World. And they were anarcho-syndicalists, so that's where I learned.
But you were ready. You were ready.
Yeah. Yes, I was ready.
Anyway.
Oh, by the way, when these Volga people started showing up in the story, weren't you all reminded of the Oompa Loompas?
Yes.
In their little train and everything.
Right.
The train, they brought it in and... it didn't really work well down there. And if you'll notice the one scene where you see it running through the corridor, it's been sped up.
Oh, yeah.
That anyway.
Probably is what gives it kind of a cartoon feel. But the first thing I thought of was the Oompa Loompas.
Right then, anyway, so more feedback on the Facebook feed. We have Laurie Nick says, my glitter gun only makes Cybermen more sparkly. Alan T. Butcher said, vegans interacted with Earth. Of course they can speak English and know what mice are. The mice had Earth built. Laurie Nix has did a funny sort of laughing emoji. And then Alan T. Butch said, good job, Kirby.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alan.
We've got some more feedback.
One of these days you need to read one of yours.
It's true, yes. Well, he does occasionally send audio through, to be fair. He has occasionally done the audio ones, so he has done. We just need to give one to Andy. The only problem I have with giving Andy one to do is that people may probably not be able to understand it, but we might just have to do it anyway. So...
Hello, Trinity McGambat Podcast is in Kirk. Revenge of the Cybermen by Joe Davis. The time ring seems to be a bit wonky, as it returns a TARDIS crew to Space Station Nerva thousands of years in its past. That thing was really built to last. The BBC gets to reuse the model Nerva from the Ark in space. Volga has wandered into the solar system, and Earth responds by having a space station with a crew of 50 to warn spaceships of its presence. Sounds like a job for Marvin the Paranoid Android. Volga is secretly inhabited by a race hiding in cave systems like Wookiee Hall in Somerset.
Yep.
It seems to have normal Earth gravity, which makes rock falls a lot more dangerous than on typical asteroids. Sarah is mainly in victim mode and is nearly killed by a Cybermat. She then bravely explores the asteroid Volga. The Cybermen are back. They want to invade Earth, and they're going to blow up an asteroid made of gold and fill the solar system with fragments of a substance which kills them. I don't think they thought that through before going all Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
When the Doctor and companions arrive, a plague seems to have wiped out most of the crew.
Bring out your dead! Bring out your dead!
The Cybermen try to crash Nerva into Voga, which might have created a problem with the Doctor having visited a couple of thousand years later. But time does not work like that in Doctor Who. Mm. A nice enough story, despite the masks used to represent the aliens. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. That's Ian Kirk, everyone.
Yay!
I'll just check there's nothing else coming through. Nope, nothing else coming through. That's it for feedback. As I alluded to earlier, no quiz this week. I didn't feel up to writing questions when I knew full well there was only two people on the show. So gave me a week off. I was quite pleased with that, actually. But I'm sure it will return in due course.
Works for me.
Master, I've been trying to go through and catalog by going through the Podbean pages.
Yes.
Catalog all of the episodes in an easier to read format.
Oh dear.
And figure out when we've done them before. And I noticed that way back before I think I joined, you and Ben talked about the story.
What? Revenge of the Cybermen?
Yes, but unfortunately that particular episode is missing from the archives. I mean, you can bring it up in Podbean, but
which
you cannot
episode? Can
play
you
it.
Tell me the episode number?
I can look it up in a minute, but
I have all the episodes in their original format on my desktop here.
I will find it here in a second, but I wanted to know what, since it's not available, I wanted to know what Ben thought of it.
I can make it available.
You can do it in one word, can't you?
Excuse me, I can make it available by finding out what episode it is, and I can then attach the appropriate order.
Yes, Master. Yes,
I have
master.
Them on tap. This is episode 129. Listen to this.
Okay, I got it.
Great services in association with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and
it's
welcome to the
now.
20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast number 129.
It's working now.
Yeah, I was quite enjoying that. Pardon? It's working now,
41.
Is it? So it's episode 41, and now you're telling me it's working now.
It wasn't working about a week ago.
It wasn't working about a week ago. So this is the episode you're talking about.
To have graced the dimensionally transcendental halls of the TARDIS. Besides, if the Doctor couldn't bring down a fully fledged Dalek
I think I'm talking about feedback at this point.
And you mean that, don't you, Ben?
I do, genuinely. Genuinely. It is actually a very good book, and I'm very proud to know the person who wrote it.
I think they're talking about my novel, The Diary of a Non-Willing Virgin.
Yes, there. You were talking about
that's
about
a fantastic book.
One of the ones we have to look.
I don't know, Kirby, I can't see any of it very
nice.
Well, the book would have been written before this episode of Hitchhikers, so...
So they're talking about Hitchhiker. What are you going on about? There's no reference that I can find on here.
Sarah is watching TV while a Cybermat creeps up.
There we go. On the page for episode 41 on Podbean, it says Ben and Adam talk about
Revenge
of the Cybermen.
No, I found the bit. I found it.
Great scenes between Tom Baker and Christopher Robbie.
Hey, okay. I'm really enthusiastic about it now. Hang on. I'm skipping forward.
Send me the post, Magic. What you've been talking about? That particular story?
The only news I can tell you about Doctor Who is that there's a lack of news still.
Chip.
Oh. Boom. I don't know.
Bye-bye, Cybermen.
I'm trying to find something that Ben says.
Reminded me again...
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Tense big ending to the story. I thought you could clearly see when the ship is trying to crash and it's going around the planet. You see the planet rotating in front of the screen. It's clearly on a drum, but it was quite effective.
Really?
It just made it look like it was going a little bit too fast.
Well, it reminded me again of Star Wars and the Death Star. Apart from the Death Star, looked slightly better when they were going round it because they didn't have the same bit popping up every 8 seconds, spinning at a ridiculous speed.
Yeah,
but for the time. Can't knock it.
No, it was very good. The thing about I had a problem with this story, and when it came up, I thought, oh, God, is because, like I said, it was the first video I ever got.
Oh, not that old Bimmin Chestnut again. Good Lord. Let's see what Ben says.
So, story plays out nicely, you know, the whole gold thing, you know what's going on, you know why it's going on, it's well written. And, you know, so for the time, for the series, it was an okay one. It's not an outstanding one.
No, certainly it's one of those sort of average Doctor Who stories, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
There we go, I think that sums it up quite well, doesn't it? It basically says what we thought of it. Well, I think you thought of it a bit more.
What you're going to see, when I'm finished with my cataloging, I'm going to post out here a picture of the sort of information that we can glean out of this. Where should I put this picture?
I don't know.
I'll put it under my request for comments.
Yeah, but what I tell you, you talked about cataloging. I was thinking the other day what would be a useful catalog feature, well, actually to know who won each edition of You Won't Get This One. So we had a tally.
I've considered that, but I'd have to go back and listen to everything.
It would take a blimmin' long time to do, but it would be quite useful, because once it's done, I could have it on a spreadsheet, and I can just add each week's winner, and then we'd have a complete, result of it.
I can start making note from now on.
That'd
but
be
take
cool.
a look at that picture that of the spreadsheet that I'm working on.
Well, where's this picture that I'm looking for? Is it on your thingy? Great thing for an audio presentation, but let's have a look. Where am I looking?
Under my request for comments for this episode.
Under your request for comments for this episode.
This has got the picture of Tom Baker getting his massage.
Oh, you're a clever man. You've got too much time in your hands, you know. Thank you very much. Okay. Right, we're going to move over Doctor Who news, although I think there's probably very little of it at the moment. But I feel this wave of potential excitement building for the new Doctor and the new series of Doctor Who, because I'm getting a lot of positive vibes coming through from most people. I know there's a few stubborn ones around there, but we won't mention them. But I'm feeling positive. I'm starting to feel positive about the near future of Doctor Who. And, so that's what I'm saying on that matter. As far as news goes, there's a 50th anniversary script starring Eccleston to be published, which says a second target for Tommy. One of the most intriguing what-ifs of the modern era of Doctor Who could be solved with the publication of a new book from Obverse Books. The Doctor Who's 50th anniversary was marked by the television story Day of the Doctor, which starred David Tennant and Matt Smith as the 10th and 11th Doctors, but it says and, but also featured John Hurt as the War Doctor, the missing incarnation of the Doctor. What is not so well known is that the original hope of the producers was to reunite the 10th and 11th Doctors with their 9th incarnation, played by Christopher Eccleston. Eccleston declined to feature in the story, but not before scripts were written by showrunner Stephen Moffat. Excerpts from these scripts are now to be released as part of a new charity book. The second target for Tommy is a charity book designed to raise money for Tommy Donbervand, a writer who, having overcome throat cancer, developed a tumour in his lung. As a result, he continues to be unable to do the school visits, which previously generated much of the income needed to support his family. As well as including the draft script for the Christopher Eccleston scene in Doctor Who's 50th anniversary special, Day of the Doctor, the book will also feature stories over two dozen writers. Every penny of the profit raised will go to support Donverband while he works on making a full recovery. The book is a sequel to A Target for Tommy, released in August 2016. More about the battle with cancer can be found on his blog, Tommy Versus Cancer. The new book can be ordered from Obverse Books, so that'd be quite interesting, I think.
If £16.
Yeah, I don't think that's too bad. And if it's going to charity, I think that's a blimmin' good. I think Debbie Melrose would be a sort of person be quite interesting in getting a book like that. But sadly, I doubt very much she'll be listening to this show. There's a new 10th Doctor comic called Facing the 10th Doctor.
Sorry, I'm getting text messages.
Oh. It's probably Derry Melrose saying, yes, I will buy that book. Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor, Facing Fate, Volume 2, Vortex Butterflies. Writer Nick why do they have to have names I can't pronounce? Abadziz. And artist Georgia Sposito. Look, Can you please have names I can pronounce? Good grief. The BBC has announced that they are releasing a recovered and restored classic Doctor Who adventure as a special edition DVD. Doctor Who, The Enemy of the World. The Enemy of the World was first transmitted between Saturday the 23rd of December 1967 and Saturday the 27th of January 1968. Five episodes were lost from the BBC archive for 45 years but are before being discovered at a TV relay station in the city of Jos, or Yoss in Nigeria, by Philip Morris, and returned to the BBC. A standard DVD of the story was released in early 2014. The special edition version...
Yeah, with no extras at all.
Pardon? What did you say?
I said the original DVD had no extras whatsoever.
Oh, okay. The special edition...
And this one's got lots.
Yeah, the special edition version has been remastered and has a number of extra features, bonus content, remastered episodes, treasures lost and found, which is with so much information now available about every Doctor Who serial, it is not easy to learn anything new. So Toby Haydo embarks, friend of the show, patron of the show even, embarks on an exciting treasure hunt to find out all he can about the production. Along the way, he'll interview some of the cast and crew, including Fraser Hines, Mary Peach, David Troughton, who made his first TV appearance in the serial as an extra. And then Recovering the Past, A Search for the Enemy of the World, produced by Paul Venezes. Yes, another awkward name. A brand new interview with episode hunter Philip Morris. We hear how he tracked down the last surviving film copy of the serial to a dusty room in the African desert. Remember Deborah Watling? I'd be nice thing to have, wouldn't it? Produced by Cameron McEwen. Family and friends and colleagues pay tribute to Debbie Watling, who played Victoria Waterfield, companion to Patrick Troughton's Doctor. Audio commentaries for all six episodes, produced by John Kelly. Contributors include Fraser Hines, Mary Peach, Gordon Faith, Milton Johns, Sylvia James, and it was moderated by Simon Harries.
Instead of Toby, that's unusual.
No, but Toby has made a contribution. Production subtitles on all six episodes written by Martin Wiggins, and the photo gallery produced by Derek Handley, and strict scripts for all six episodes as PDF. So that's a pretty good bunch of special features on that one. Might be worth getting, Kirby, eh?
Yeah, I would love to get this one. The question is it going to be released in the US?
I couldn't tell you that one, but I tell you, I haven't actually got it on DVD because I downloaded it from iTunes when I got
it. Yeah, so did I.
So I haven't actually got it as a solid format anyway, so it might be worth getting it just for the extras, like so.
And then the reason I didn't get it on DVD later was because it had no extras.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Now, what I'm finding frustrating is what's the one that was recently released with the animation?
What, Power of the Daleks?
No. Here, let me check.
Oh, Shada.
Shada. You've probably got yours already.
I have, yes.
I've ordered mine, and it still hasn't been released in the U.S. It's sitting in perpetual wait.
Oh dear!
Both on Amazon and on Walmart. Mm. Apparently, it's not going to be released until August. So I hope we don't get around to it.
No, I think that's unlikely.
Okay.
But we'll find a way. We'll find Kirby. If things progress that far in that period of time, we'll find a way. But that's all I'm saying on the matter. Doctor Who magazine.
Well, I already have every single other version of it, including what's the guy's name? The super fan that everyone hates.
Ian Levine.
I've got the Ian Levine version because it was put out there for a short while.
Okay. Anyway, as I was trying to say, Doctor Who magazine 522 is out. It's got quite of interesting features on it. One that stood out for me was Susan Coleman, who was in Strictly Come Dancing this summer, and I didn't know she was a Doctor Who writer. A Scottish comedian.
Kodak UK?
What? What did you say?
Are we talking about Who Won at Kodak UK?
No, we're talking about Doctor Who magazine.
Okay.
Anyway,
You can get it from whowon.co.uk.
I know that,
sure.
Yes. But I didn't know she was a Doctor Who fan. She kept that very quiet when she was on Strictly Come Dancing. Excuse me. Yes, and also there's a cover featuring Empire of the Daleks, Untold Stories from the Original Invasion. And yes, as Kirby says, you can get your copy quite quickly from whowon.co.uk. But there's also
whowon.co.uk.
There's also another feature about the dinner with the doctors, which is a dinner with Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, David Tennant, Peter Davison, Matt Smith, and via a iPad, Paul McGann. So it looked really daft, the iPad thing. So yeah, there was a dinner or a cup of tea with the doctors or something, like some sort of breakfast with the doctors. That's right. It was a comic relief competition, wasn't it? So yeah, love to have been on that, but somebody was must have paid a lot of money to Comic Relief to get the chance to do that. So yeah, that's essentially news this week. We've covered whowon.co.uk because Kirby did. No, we haven't really. I just want to check on the Who One website to see that nothing new is approaching. Oh, yes, we've got the Doctor Third.
Before you move on, there was a supposedly a short that was put out by the BBC after this particular, before the Terror of the Zygons.
Yes.
Called Disney Time.
Yes.
Where the Doctor takes a trip, you know, to go watch, you know, I guess short Disney shorts to promote the next Disney season, and he even supposedly says in it, you know, that although he was called by the Brigadier, he was going to stop in here and watch these shorts, and then when he arrives at the next location, he's told he's late, so that's supposed to kind of put that into canon that he made this little side trip before appearing in the next episode.
Oh.
And I just wondered if you saw that.
I didn't. Well, thank you for that, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I've seen... I've seen that somewhere.
Have you?
It may be on YouTube.
Hmm.
Okay.
Well, he post link on the fundamental like page.
Character doing this, this little promotion for Disney.
Master, cool. Did you?
I did see Disney Time at the time when Tom Baker presented it. If that's what you're talking about, but I haven't seen anything on it of it since.
Master, did you delete the little short version of the live?
Yes, I did.
Video. Oh, okay.
There was a hello from Ashley on it.
That had Ian's transcript in it.
I apologise to you, Ian. I didn't realise that. I just thought it was a bit pointless having it on there for 5 seconds, so I took it off. So sorry about that, Ian. Yeah, something has come through on that, actually, before we move on
to... So you did see this Disney Time. You just didn't remember that he mentioned about how he was on his way to respond to the brig.
I don't remember that part of it, but I remember watching a Disney Time with the Doctor on it, obviously.
Well, did he only do one?
I don't know. I remember seeing him on it, but I don't know
how. Yeah, they're on YouTube. I will post the link.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. What we've got come through. We've got Alan T. Butcher says, I did read my Doctor Who and the Silurians review. I think it was on the show 3 times, in fact. Mary read it, then Adam found my audio and played it, and then Debbie read it the following week. Must have been good then. Laurie Nick says, was Adam going for that late night deep voice DJ thing back in the early podcast days? I was just more laid back in those days, Laurie, to be fair. Right, and also I had a more comfier chair, and I think I was able to keep quiet because I had babies. Isabella was quite small in those days, so I had to keep a bit quieter while doing the show. There's various reasons. The other thing, we used to do it in the car as well, I seem to remember, which of course
I felt
a bit awkward with parcels by walking past while I'm talking into a
I did a many of them with you in the car.
Hey! All right then, back to whowon.co.uk. Just excited to see that the Doctor 10th, Doctor 6th, Doctor 5th and Doctor 3rd Mr. Men books I do want them, but I don't think I can really justify spending that money on those at the moment. But yes, I would love to have those. Yeah, and that's what I'm going to say on that, because all the other stuff we talked about previous weeks is still on there, and nothing else has really been updated. There's a Whoology Regenerated Doctor Who Miscellany. That's actually quite interesting. That price has been knocked down from $14.99 to $12.99. That actually does sound quite interesting. How many planets has the TARDIS visited? Can you name the Doctor's favourite Gallifreyan bedtime stories? What's the best way to defeat the Sontaran? Doesn't sound quite as good as the book that I've got on Amazon that I wrote, the Facts About Doctor Who book, if anybody wants to buy that. But it does actually...
I've bought it.
Oh, thank you very much, Kirby. Right, lavazi.co.uk, which I need to send an invoice to, and I keep forgetting. I've got some Doctor Who items among other, obviously the Star Trek stuff is lovely as well, but the Doctor Who items specifically are scarves, sweaters and jumpers, umbrellas. Have we got umbrellas? Oh, we have. A TARDIS umbrella and a TARDIS on a planet. It's called the official Doctor Who Time Lord folding umbrella, officially licensed by the BBC. Excuse me, I'm going to cough. And also we've got ties as well, which is the tie that looks a little bit like the Fourth Doctor's scarf, and a lovely black knitted tie with the emblem of the TARDIS on it, along with the usual long scarves, which I think if you're a Doctor Who fan, doesn't matter which Doctor you have, it's rather a trademark of being a Doctor Who fan. If you really want to shout about being a Doctor Who fan, you need to walk about with a long coat and a big Fourth Doctor scarf, rather like I do. It's quite nice sometimes because people do come up to you and say, oh, I love your scarf, oh, the Doctor, and stuff like that. So I quite like that. And some people just think, what the hell are you looking like? But there you go. That's whoone.co.uk and Lavazzi, our illustrious sponsors. Now, next week,
yay,
we're going to be talking about Terror of the Zygons, which is an improvement on this week. I can tell you that straight away. And also sees the departure of two of my favourite Doctor Who characters for some time. One of which, sadly, is the Brigadier, as played by Nicholas Courtney. But obviously, he does eventually come back again. But this is the... he does look quite different actually on his next appearance. But so yes, this is essentially the last proper unit story, I think. Would you say so, Kirby?
Yeah, I guess.
There's a little homage to it later on, but this is essentially the last story that you could say the Third Doctor could have fitted into nicely.
Okay. And yes, they don't come back again until the Seventh Doctor, is that right?
The Brigadier doesn't come back to the Fifth Doctor.
Yeah, not the Brigadier.
Wait, well, there's a touch of them in... in the android one, isn't there?
Yeah, he's with the Fifth Doctor. You're right.
Sorry, what are we talking
unit
about? Unit doesn't really come back
really
again.
Really make a full appearance until
the Ninth Doctor, isn't it? Or the Tenth Doctor? Because the Brigadier... Oh, yeah, there is a... it's the Fifth Doctor, because obviously the Second Doctor in the Five Doctors goes to visit the Brigadier at Unit HQ, doesn't he, Kirby? In the Five Doctors.
Hello. And also,
are you still there?
I thought there was the one, an android one.
I was going to say that's the homage to unit, the android invasion.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
But for me, that doesn't count so much because it's not proper unit; it's an android version of it, mostly. So this is, I think really people probably, I know Doctor Who fans alike, we'll probably get emails left, right and centre, but I'm fairly sure the next time we properly see unit is in the Five Doctors. But there you go. So
I have just this week the Chicago TARDIS announced that they have their latest guest is going to be Pearl Mackey.
Oh, well, I hope she shows up to that one.
Yeah, I hope she does. I hope she doesn't cancel, because I'd like to meet her.
I've had, obviously, Laurie talking about going to Gallifrey 1, which, when I win the lottery, that's where I'll be heading one day. And also, next week is the 18th of February. Deb's doing a bridal show in Lakeside in Wootton, but I can't attend that. So I'm fairly thinking I should be able to do a podcast in the evening. How are we fixed?
I should be there.
Good.
When?
Next week. This time next week.
This time next week? Yeah, I'm fine.
So, Terror of the Zygons is your task in the meantime.
Easy enough.
Is it?
Lock out.
Okay. Ian Kirk has published his transcripts on the current live feed.
Okay, good.
So thank you, Ian. And that sort of really wraps it up for this week. Sorry there's no quiz, but I deserve a week off from time to time.
I'm sorry there was no quiz too.
Return next week, fingers crossed, as will the funny-looking dog in the corner there.
It's all being a loser all the time.
So, until next week, thank you for persevering with the show, and have a good week. Enjoy Patera of the Zygons. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Goodbye.
Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.